It's Wednesday and time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us for our first discussion of 2015 is veteran journalist Kevin Wooster, Rapid City Bureau reporter for KELO-TV. And Kevin, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, Carl.
And also with us on the line is John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. And John, welcome.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, former Governor Mike Rounds was sworn into the U.S. Senate yesterday. Kevin Wooster, how long does it take for freshman senators to really start to make their presence felt in Washington?
About 5.5 years, I think. I think, you know, if you're John Thune and you just beat Tom Daschle, you've already made your presence felt, and that you come in with a platform that's much larger than normal. I think Mike Rounds, as a former governor, comes in with connections that are going to be helpful to him. And I think the fact that due in no small part to former Senator Pressler's presence, the fact that the campaign got a little bit more, focused nationally than it might have otherwise, I think that probably helps him a little bit too. He got a decent selection of committee assignments with armed services, banking, environment, and public works, and what he called the icing on the cake, veterans affairs. So he's certainly in a position to have some influence through committees. I guess for now it depends on how Mike Rounds approaches things and how he works with others.
Well, John Hunter, Kevin just mentioned that, we're dealing with a former governor here. Traditionally, how well do former governors adapt to being just one of 100?
Well, it's a challenge, and I think in some ways one of the 100 might be a challenge, but the bigger issue, I think, is the fact that the Senate doesn't do as much as they're used to doing. I mean, usually in a bureaucracy and in a governor's chair, they get to make decisions, and they said, let's do this, and you launch whatever initiative, or you can propose things where, in some senses, a lot of the bills get passed in the House, sent to the Senate, where they don't even talk about them, or they kind of ignore them, there's a lot of background, backdoor kind of discussions and so forth. So I think it's a big adjustment. A lot of governors it's kind of ground them up a little bit that they don't have a chance to put their fist on their desk and say, let's go ahead and do this, because that's not what happens there.
Rounds' election helped Republicans take control of the U.S. Senate. From our perspective here in South Dakota, how much change, Kevin Wooster, will Republican control of Congress have on Capitol Hill?
Well, Senator Rounds says that it's going to change the way it operates. He argues that the GOP leadership, which includes our own Senator John Thune, has made a commitment to making the process work better than it did, and that includes trying to get things out of committee, where they sometimes seem to hole up for months and, years, and get them to the floor because they deserve a vote. And I think that was one of the criticisms of Harry Reid, was that sometimes votes didn't come. I think you can make that criticism, too, sometimes in the House. And it depends on when leadership wants something to come. And Rounds says that that's going to change, and that might also involve people staying more on Fridays and being back to work on Mondays. That's been kind of a thing where there's a lot of people peeling out and coming back a little later and trying to cram a lot of stuff done into the middle of the week. And Ron says that the leadership is going to require something to be done, or they'll even hold them maybe into the weekend sometimes. So it'll be interesting to see if it becomes more efficient and more responsive, and if those floor votes really do start to multiply.
John Hunter, do you think that'll happen, U.S. Congress becoming, the Senate in particular, becoming more efficient?
Well, it would be terrific if it did. You may remember when Senator Daschle had his Daschle discussion thing up in Brookings a couple of months ago with former Senator Trent Lott. That was exactly the kind of thing that they were trying to get to, is that you'd get more votes and you would, he said, and I didn't realize it, on how late in the week members of Congress are arriving, as Kevin just described, and maybe travel on Monday or even come into the office on Tuesday, maybe do some business on Wednesday and take off on Thursday. And so, years ago they talked about the do-nothing Congress, but it's these last few years, I think a record low number of bills actually were passed, some for symbolic purposes and some for minor issues, but It would be great if there were more floor votes and more things got out of committee and they worked harder.
Former Senator Larry Pressler was on Dakota Midday earlier this week, and he said that he thought there'd be an initial period of detente between Republicans and Democrats, but he wasn't very optimistic that it would last too long. Kevin Wooster, what are your thoughts on Pressler's assessment?
I'll be a little surprised if it lasts very long. I think I'm with the former senator on that. I haven't sensed that there's any particular change in the division, and I don't know if it'll make a difference. It'll be interesting to see how the Republicans, now that they have, you know, consolidated their majority in both houses, if the mainstream Republicans and the hard right end up battling a little bit more, or if they can come together. And I guess the question is, some of this legislation that comes out, if it gets vetoed, will they be able to organize an override? In terms of better relations, I'll have to see that to believe it.
John Hunter, what are your thoughts?
Well, there's a couple things. You know, we're used to having the House and Senate not get along because they were held by different parties, and now that the Republicans hold both houses there, it'll be between the White House and Congress would be that main division. But I think Kevin brings up the point is the Republicans, and, you know, the way to get things done is if both sides were to move to the center, and do you think that's happened in this election? And if you, and, you know, it's possible, but then when John Boehner faced this challenge, it was clearly that the far right says he's not right enough. So it doesn't feel yet like everyone's moving to the middle to get things done.
Congresswoman Kristi Noem has been appointed to the Ways and Means Committee, which deals with tax, trade, and economic policies. Kevin Wooster, what do you think this means for South Dakotans to have her on this committee?
Well, I mean, when you look at the kind of issues it deals with, and, you know, it was always called the Powerful Ways and Means Committee. I don't know if it still is, because it seems like we don't have the kind of committee leaders that wield the power the way they used to in Congress. But, I mean, when you're dealing with taxes and you know, Social Security and Medicare issues and all kinds of really crucial, essential issues, it's obviously important to have a voice on that committee. And it may not look like it's as directly influential as, say, the Agriculture Committee might be, or some of the forestry committees that, you know, affect the forest out here, or veterans, you know, with Ellsworth and Veterans Care and things. But it's a very wide, influential body, and, you know, it's an important spot.
John Hunter, what do you think it means for Kristi Noem to be on this committee, the Ways and Means Committee?
Well, I think it's a big deal, too. It is, you know, and since all the kind of the tax bills would come out of the House, and this is the committee there that starts those, it would be very important, especially if Congress is, and the President are going to make any progress on the deficit and those kind of things. I think it's very significant that the new chairman is Paul Ryan, just took office yesterday. Because, as Kevin said, they don't always have notable leaders of that. Probably back to Dan Rostenkowski is the last kind of big name there. But Paul Ryan, you know, and I suppose Republicans like him and Democrats don't like him, but he's certainly at the forefront of this. And so I think that raises the profile of it even more than it normally would. So for Kristi to be on that, I think she'll be in the center of a lot of things.
The first piece of legislation introduced in the Republican-controlled Senate was a bill approving the Keystone XL pipeline, which would run through parts of South Dakota. If the bill passes Congress, the White House said yesterday that the president would veto it. Also yesterday, state regulators rejected an effort from Keystone opponents to throw out a request for the reapproval of a portion of the pipeline. Kevin, how do you expect this issue is going to continue to play out here in South Dakota?
Well, I certainly wasn't surprised that the PUC folks want to have the hearing on this and, you know, really thoroughly look at it. I didn't expect it to be thrown out at this point. And it still looks to me like the question all remains with the White House. And if the White House does veto the Republican devised bill, will there be an override? I think it still rests with Barack Obama and where he wants to come down on this and have the State Department come down on this. I guess I don't see long-term it being blocked in South Dakota or even in Nebraska. It seems to me like it's going to be a federal decision, and it's going to be one that it seems to me Obama's been leaning more towards approving, but I think that's far from certain.
John Hunter, your thoughts?
Well, it's hard to come up with a compromise on this. It would, you know, you can't say, well, let's build it, let's build part of it for through one state and not another. So it seems like all the stars have to come together, align in order to get this to pass. So I don't know. And it's interesting, of course, this Keystone XL is the, you know, known around the nation as this big issue, but other pipelines get built and there's not nearly the rancor that goes with those. I'm not exactly sure why this one, and of course, I guess because it's, you know, with Canada and this, again, the State Department involved and so on. But I don't see a way for it to kind of come up with a compromise that seems to satisfy everyone, at least not yet.
And you know, it's kind of taken on a life beyond itself as an issue, as John points out. It gets into green energy, it gets into global warming, it gets into the whole division between the conservatives and the progressives or liberals. And I think that you look at it, and it's the ridiculous nature of the jobs estimates. I mean, some of them are just outrageously high. They're just not going to happen. The benefits to South Dakota are a lot more limited than they would argue. And in my opinion, so are the potential environmental effects. I don't think the kind of calamitous catastrophes that are being projected by the opponents are likely to ever happen. There's going to be problems, certainly. But I think it has taken on a life of its own that's much, much bigger than the project itself.
Well, coming up this weekend, Governor Dugard is inaugurated for his second term. John Hunter, do you expect anything different from the governor in a second term, or do you expect his approach to be pretty much similar to what we've seen in the first 4 years?
Well, of course, we used his budget address, right, as a little bit of a barometer to see what that's going to be like. And it seems like I think he'll be true to what he believes and that there won't be a lot of change. It's possible, though, that I think he might be open to some other ideas. You know, he hasn't really, come down very particularly firm on the Medicaid expansion thing. And when I say, I mean, he said, no, I don't want to do this, but I think he's willing to talk about that, and my guess is that there will be issues with the budget, especially in education, that I think he'll be willing to talk to members as well. So I think it'll be mostly business as usual, but I think it'll be a good dialogue again. That's kind of been the hallmark of these last few legislative sessions, is that they've been able to get things done.
Kevin Wooster, business as usual?
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to see how Governor Dugard shapes up his second term. And, you know, he's a guy that wants to pay for things. He doesn't want to borrow money. And, is he comfortable, for example, with video lottery and how much we rely on video lottery in our budget and, these video lottery casinos all over the place and their impacts? Is he going to try to do anything in the next 4 years with teacher salaries? Certainly there's going to be something substantial done with roads and bridges and that whole issue. How is he going to shape his legacy? Because, you know, often right now his legacy is, I cut a bunch of stuff and then I came back and, you know, things got better and we did some things that were good. But what's his legacy going to be? I think you shape that in your second term. You really kind of polish that and maybe come up with something that we'll be surprised by. I would be surprised if he doesn't have an initiative that we don't see or anticipate right now.
Looking to the session, which starts next week, state lawmakers going back to Pierre. Some of the big issues under discussion, what do you think we'll see, John Hunter?
Well, I think you saw 105 legislators all say that they support education. And so I think there will be, you know, I think there'll be a teacher salary initiative of some sort. To try to increase that, and maybe that's why that number got proposed, is there's maybe a little room for it to grow. But Governor Dugard, again, is not interested in doing things that he can't pay for. And so if there is an increase in that state aid to education number, it's going to have to come from somewhere else, or a tax increase or something. So I think that will be, I think the Medicaid expansion will be an issue. You know, Representative Bernie Hunhoff chose not to be a part of the House leadership, I think, in to focus on this issue and work with both sides on that. So I think that'll be, and as Kevin mentioned, the highway funding issue.
Kevin Wooster, do you think we'll see any surprises, or is that just hard to predict surprises?
Well, I think you'll see the typical nibbling around the edges on the teacher salary and the education funding, and maybe shift it a little bit. You know, I'm intrigued to see what happens on Medicaid expansion. I think in his heart, Governor Dugard believes that he'd like to be able to cover more people, but the bigger belief in his heart is he'd like to be able to pay for anything, and his fear that federal funding that's promised now will disappear and it will require tens of millions of dollars a year more in state aid, you know, state taxes, state resources. Will he be convinced that the amount of federal money that comes in will generate enough in the economic impact that that'll all shake out and that you know, the impact down the road will not be huge? I don't know. I think this is an interesting issue, and it's one that, you know, if Medicaid isn't expanded, it's one of those things that could be part of the defining factor on his legacy or the way some people see it. And so could education. And again, so could roads and bridges. I mean, if things are crumbling and we end up in a real dire situation years down the road, a guy that was governor at that time when something could have been done doesn't want to be seen as the guy who didn't do anything. So it'd be interesting to see where that goes.
So another issue that could come up this session, or looks like it will come up, has to do with petitions for candidates. The State Board of Elections and new Secretary of State Chantel Krebs have endorsed proposals that they say would strengthen weaknesses in South Dakota's election laws. The proposals include starting the circulation of petitions a month earlier on December 1st, a new deadline of the second Tuesday in March to challenge petitions. Do these seem like good ideas, John?
Well, I do. I've seen a little bit of Secretary Krebs' agenda, and I think she's very thoughtful about these things, and these are issues, and there's other issues in the Secretary of State's office that need addressing, and apparently she's willing to go in and address them. And she, I think, has enough observation of that office from her position in the legislature over the last decade to see what needs to be done, and I think the agenda is the right one, and I think it'll probably all pass.
Kevin Wooster, for you, these particular ones we just mentioned, do you think these will solve some of the problems that we saw petition signatures this past year?
Well, it seems to make sense to begin a process earlier and to allow more time if something's going to be challenged for that challenge to occur before the ballots have to be printed in it, and also to allow some random sampling of signatures earlier in the process. I think, as I remember by the state, by the Secretary of State's office itself, which oddly, I guess, didn't have the authority to do that in the way they want it done. And it just all sounds reasonable. In a state that relies so much and uses the petition process so much for big issues, it makes sense to tighten things up as much as we can and make the process as workable as possible.
Well, finally, in Rapid City, Kevin, petition signatures, talking about petition signatures, they've been submitted to put the expansion of the Rushmore Plaza Civic Center up to a vote. Why do petitioners want a referendum on this?
Well, it seems to me like just about everybody wants a referendum on this. The mayor says he supports it, but he got more petition signatures, I think, than any other carrier. And so he supports the project, but supported the petition drive and the public vote, which looks like it's going to be in March. And it's a lot of money. I mean, you know, the amount of money we're talking about, $180 million, the most ever spent in city history, and it's not a universally supported plan. I don't know how that's going to shake out, but they're going to begin next week some regular coffee talk meetings, I guess they call them, on the weekly, that are going to go through a process. And Sam Quaker is big on process with public involvement. And especially when you've got an election coming up, as he does, with a possible, you know, tough challenger. So I think this is going to be one of the more interesting issues we've had in Rapid City for a long, long time.
Is it rather controversial?
Yeah, I think it is, because some people just say it's crazy the maximum over there in the Civic Center now, the arena, is about 10,000 when you put seats on the floor, and I think they're talking about 15,000 with a maximum of 19,000 with floor seating. And the place was, you know, designed in the 60s, built in the 70s, and it's really, if you really want to compete on the big time level, they say, supporters say, you need this. Now, a lot of the opponents say, where are you going to park people? It's already hard to park in that area, and how in the world are we going to fill 19,000 seats? And, you know, this is going to eat up a lot of our sales tax money for a long time to come. So, yeah, you know, there's some points of kind of bristly discussion coming.
Kevin, you should have the naming rights. You should purchase those on your own behalf.
I'm working on a name. I just can't settle on it.
All right. Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Kevin, thanks for joining the program.
My pleasure.
And John, nice to talk with you as well.
Thanks, Carl.